nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Jack Palance said, "You don't last long if you're not willing to make a commitment." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who make commitments. Our first playmaker is a former Green Beret, while our second playmaker is a former FBI special agent. With us today is a co-owner and COO of a company that wants you to eat, drink, and watch movies, while our next playmaker is a chief of police of a city with the third lowest rate of violent crimes for cities over 200,000. These great playmakers are Bill DiGaetano. Bill is co-owner and COO of Alamo Drafthouse DFW, and Gregory Rushen. Gregory is Plano Chief of Police, and we're going to begin today's show with Chief Rushen. Gregory Rushen is a chief of the Plano Police Department, which is an accredited agency with nearly 600 employees. Chief Rushen has a diverse law enforcement background with over 34 years of police experience. He began his career as a deputy sheriff in Illinois and as a former FBI agent serving in Washington, D.C., Chief Rushen has a bachelor's degree in law enforcement administration and a master of science degree in human relations and business. He also holds a certificate in public management from the University of Texas at Dallas and is a graduate of the FBI Academy, the FBI National Academy, the Senior Management Institute for Police at Harvard, and the FBI Law Enforcement Executive Development Program. So welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. It's an honor being here.
Well, you said in a recent Time magazine article that came out about a month ago, "I want to be on the cutting edge of everything, but not on the less proven bleeding edge." What do you mean?
Well, you know, when you lead a law enforcement agency, you work for the citizens of your community. And the citizens of the community want the best services possible. Whenever they hear that Richardson or Carrollton or Garland has a new program, they wonder why we don't have that same service or program for Plano. So we have to keep our eye on the horizon and make sure that we know what's out there, what's available, whether it be to fight crime, to educate the community. And we have to make sure that we invest in that if it's the appropriate time. You know, the last thing you want to do, though, is invest before it's really tested. And a lot of times, if it's not tested, you may be on, I call the bleeding edge, and you may have issues with it. So we like to look at it, research it thoroughly, make sure it's been used somewhere else and tested, let it be beta tested elsewhere, not in Plano, and then, of course, bring it into Plano for a program for our citizens.
So being a little more conservative before you bring a program in.
Yes, I think it's being conservative and being wise as well.
Well, I took that quotation from a magazine article that came out about a month ago, a Time magazine article that was best places for staying safe. Plano was one of them. And it was under Healthiest Places to Live. Why did they pick Plano, and why did you get interviewed in that article?
Well, I think that they looked at the major crimes. There are seven major crimes that the FBI collects each year. All law enforcement agencies provide information based on homicide, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, larceny, burglary, and auto theft. Those are the seven major crimes. And to make sure it's done consistently, the FBI defines those particular crimes so everybody reports with the same standards because, as you know, laws in different states have different definitions. They then take those statistics and they break them down per 1,000 population. That way you can compare dissimilar cities, for instance, like Richardson with the population a little over 100,000 and Plano with the city about 270,000.
I moved to the Dallas area, late 1970s, and Plano was much smaller than it is today. It's had a tremendous growth, and I think a big part of that was JCPenney moving in, EDS moving in, everything just exploded after that. You are, we're referring to, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, from the FBI Uniform Crime Report, the third lowest for cities over 200,000 in violent crimes. Has this been a major issue that you had to work on, or have violent crimes just been low in Plano historically?
Well, across the country, agencies have seen a drop in violent crime in the last few years. Of course, once again, there's seven major crimes. Four of those are violent crimes and three are property crimes. The most often occurring types of crimes are property crimes, particularly in Plano. We have much fewer violent crimes. But I think that people forget about the other half of that equation when you talk about safety in a community, and that's traffic crashes. If you're going to be killed or injured in some way in Plano, statistically it's going to be in a traffic crash more than it's going to be as a result of a crime. And rarely do you see those types of measures reflected in these safety studies or safety articles that are done nationally.
Well, you have a special training, obviously, for your officers, and you have a process for what they do at a traffic stop. So are they trained on this on a regular basis in terms of how to – oh, it's almost PR, too, in the way they deal with a citizen that's pulled over. What kind of training do they receive?
Well, you know, whenever you stop someone on traffic, for example, to give a traffic citation, that's usually not something that the person getting the citation is going to appreciate much. And you have to try to handle it as professionally as possible. And sometimes things that are well meant may upset the motorist. And so you have to try to control those contacts as best as possible. So we have a script, so to speak, a 7-point violator contact, we call it, where whenever you stop a car, you'd give them some sort of welcome. You'd tell them why they were stopped. You would ask them if there's some emergency. You'd get their driver's license and insurance. When you return, you'd tell them, well, actually, let me back up. Before you go back to your car, you tell them what action you're going to take. Go back to your car, take that action, explain the action to them, and then give them some sort of professional parting words, you know. Have a good day, whatever it might be. You know, please be safe. Sometimes, of course, those can be misturned too, as you can probably guess, when somebody's angry. So we try to give them a pattern to use so that they can reduce possible conflicts or misunderstandings between citizens and police officers. And it's worked well. We've had it for many years.
Yeah, I'm sure people, when they're pulled over, have a little bit of stress just from that, the fact they're being pulled over by a police officer. It's interesting. You had a background as started out as a deputy sheriff in Illinois. Then you went to the FBI. You actually were a patrolman or a police officer in Plano. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was in Fulton County Sheriff's Office in Illinois for about three and a half years. Then my wife got out of college. She was a few years younger than I. And it was a very bad economy back then. So we looked around the country and decided on where we wanted to live. Being from Illinois, of course, the first thing is it had to be warm. So we looked and we decided we didn't want California. We decided in Texas or Florida, then Texas, then Dallas, and then either, you know, Arlington or Plano. And Plano hired me first. So that's how we ended up in Plano. We actually picked this community out of the entire country.
And how did you end up with the FBI after being a police officer in Plano?
Well, after about 5 years in Plano, I was thinking of going to law school. I was going to go before to law school after my undergraduate. And at that point, the FBI was hiring. I was contacted and went through their process and was hired as an FBI agent. And at that point, me and my wife went to Washington, D.C. was my first assignment.
Interesting. My father was telling me when he was going to law school that during law school, the FBI would, on a regular basis, come over and interview potential attorneys to potentially have them in the FBI. So that's apparently a good source for getting FBI agents.
Yes, I can't speak now, because, of course, it's dated. But whenever I was in, there was 5 programs to get in. They had to be an attorney, an accountant, a linguist, a scientist, or a generalist. So they take a diversified backgrounds individuals, but generally you got to have a advanced degree of some sort. And there are a lot of attorneys that are working as FBI agents.
Well, you and I met a few months ago, and in our conversation, I was impressed with the fact that you have an interesting philosophy of how you run your police department and how you compare it to a regular organization as CEO of the police department. Talk a little bit about your philosophy and how you run your department.
Well, you know, we have a department of 500 full-time and approximately 100 part-time employees, about a $56 million budget. And public sectors like police departments, we study business quite a bit. When I went to Harvard, for example, for the Senior Management Institute, we do studies of business cases and try to see what we can learn from the business sector and bring that back into the public sector. I believe, first of all, that most companies will have a mission statement. I think mission is important to focus in on what's important in your organization, what you should focus on. But I would challenge that if you go to most businesses and you ask an employee, what's your mission statement, they first got to think if they've even seen it before. Well, it's on the wall, and I'm not really sure what it says. In our organization, every individual has to know what that mission statement is. They have to live it every day. And we also have performance measures. We measure everything that we do. And our 4 organizational performance measures are crime rate, traffic safety, timely service, and quality service. And we have to know those elevator speeches about what that means, how you apply that mission statement, and, of course, those performance measures, how you apply those and what's important as well. And I think it really helps us focus in on what's important, particularly in a service industry where there would be a lot of ability for people to decide what their job might be and maybe totally different things than the person next to them. So I think that really gives us an advantage and edge in our department.
Well, you can't improve what you can't measure, and you're taking those key areas and measuring those to see how you're doing. By the way, should you want to check the mission statement, which is our mission is to provide outstanding police services in partnership with the community to maintain a safe environment that contributes to the quality of life, you can go to plano.gov/214/police, but there's another website that's even easier than that.
www.planopolice.org.
There you go. I'm looking at the one that's on the website right now. What's interesting is you run your police department like a business, and you also have a little higher paid police officer in the police department too. Talk a little bit about that and what kind of person you look for as a police officer.
Well, you know, years ago we used to get people. We used to get our officers mainly from military and other police departments, or maybe from college. Today, though, we get them from a lot of different sources. Several years ago, we started having a four-year degree requirement, and we saw recruits come from different areas. We saw people from finance, former teachers, all different types of backgrounds. So we have a rich diversity of background of people that apply at the Plano Police Department. We do make concessions, though. If you've been 3 years active duty military and you've got honorable discharge, you can get credit for 2 years of college, or if you've been a police officer similarly for a number of years, then you can also get credit for 2 years of college, but you have to have a minimum of two. And I'm guessing that probably 95% of the people that we hire all have bachelor's or higher. Many have advanced degrees too.
Now, did that help with getting accredited by the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies by having that type of police officer?
Well, it helps, I think, our department to have a more diverse background and more educated department, but to be accredited, you could still be accredited and not have a four-year degree requirement. Accreditation is much like in hospitals, it's much like in schools where you're accredited. Police departments have a similar accreditation process. We have 460 international standards that you have to meet. And, of course, depending on what services you provide, some have dispatch under police, some don't. So you may have a little bit fewer or more than another department based on what services you do provide at the individual police departments. You have to have people come from outside the department every 3 years for an on-site, a 3 or 4 day on-site, to really look at your departments, to look at your proofs of standards, you're complying with these standards, and then, of course, that you are living that day-to-day. Because accreditation isn't just standards every 3 years people come in and look at. It's something that you have to live day-to-day. You have to have it part of your operations. It's the framework for your policies in your organization as well. And the last two reaccreditations that we've had, we've been an exemplary agency. We've been a model for other agencies, which is about 10% of the accredited agencies get that status. We're very proud of that.
You may want to go and check out that Time magazine article on healthiest places to or best place for staying safe, healthiest places to live, which is Plano. One of the things as wrapping up now, I noticed that on your website, you have not only your direct phone number, but your email too. And I was impressed with the ability to get in touch with you. So Plano residents have that ability to get right to you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my job is to serve the citizens. There's a lot of voices in the community. I got to listen to all those different voices. I got to be accessible. You'll see me out practically every night of the week at some event. I'm a member of Rotary. I coach youth sports in the past. I've done everything I can to be part of the community. I raised my kids in Plano. I've lived in Plano for many years, and it's my home.
This has been an interesting conversation. Gregory Russian, Chief of Police of the Plano Police Department, and you can get a hold of Chief Russian at planopolice.org, his phone number and his website there if you need to get a hold of him. Chief Russian, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. It's been an honor.
Don't go away. We have more. We have the co-owner and COO of Alamo Draft House Cinema. We have Bill DiGaetano. Don't go away. Back after this.
Join the fight against childhood cancer by joining the 29th annual Oktoberfest Run for Children on Saturday, September 20th. This family-friendly event is part of Addison's annual Oktoberfest celebration, with all proceeds benefiting Wipe Out Kids Cancer, a Dallas-based nonprofit dedicated to raising awareness and funding for childhood cancer research and to providing hope and support to children with cancer. There's a one-mile fun run and a 5K course, cash prizes, free food, German beer, awards, and entertainment. Also, receive one free admission to Oktoberfest on race day. Register at OktoberFest5K.com.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. We're going to have an interesting guest this segment. It's Bill DiGaetano. Bill is the co-owner and COO of Alamo Drafthouse Cinema DFW, in addition to having the franchise rights for Alamo Drafthouse Cinema in North Texas with his partner. Alamo Drafthouse is dinner, drinks, movies, and events all under one roof. Attention to detail and film presentation and programming has earned accolades from the likes of Entertainment Weekly, number one theater in America, Wired.com, coolest movie theater in the world, Fandango.com, one of the best theaters in the country, and Time Magazine's best theater ever. Now, Bill served in the United States Army with the Army's 7th Special Forces Group, also known as the Green Berets. He was awarded 2 Bronze Stars for service in Afghanistan. In 2013, he was one of Dallas Business Journal's 40 Under 40 recipients. Bill, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about your background. So how does a Green Beret get into the food, beverage, and movie business?
It's an interesting story. It starts with me going in the military a little later in life than most people. I got my undergrad in Austin at St. Edward's University and worked for about 5 or 6 years in finance and at some marketing firms doing sales. Always wanted to go in the military, and at 25, I joined the United States Army with the intention of becoming a Green Beret, and luck and a prayer, and 2 years of training later, I was able to get to my team. Deployed twice to Afghanistan, and as I was heading to my second deployment in Afghanistan, my wife and I were pregnant with our first kiddo. I decided it was time to get back into the business world and wrote the business plan for Alamo Drafthouse, DFW, while I was serving in Afghanistan. And 3-4 years after I returned, we had our first one open in Richardson.
Well, let me ask 2 questions based on what you said. Why Green Berets? Why did you want to become a Green Beret?
I always wanted to go into special operations and looked at all the branches, Marines, Navy, Air Force. What I liked about the Green Berets was it was a proactive force. When I left the military in 2010, Green Berets were actively serving in almost 128 different countries. You know, we know about Afghanistan, Iraq, but Green Berets are one of the only proactive military forces in the world. We actually go into countries where our job is to integrate with locals, train locals to fight for themselves, and allow them to fight the conflicts or resolve them peacefully on their own. So I like that proactive nature of it. You're both a fighter and a diplomat, which was interesting to me.
Gave you good education. Now, you said you got the germ of the idea when you were Green Beret in Afghanistan, but where did you get that idea? Had you seen this concept before? Had you heard about it? How did you begin to work on that and develop one in DFW?
The love of movies for me was ever since I was a kid. And, you know, it was funny, when I got my license at 16, it wasn't the freedom to drive. It was the freedom to go to Blockbuster on my own that I really loved. But being in Austin since 1998, I stumbled onto Alamo Drafthouse in 2001. So I was a fan first, and probably a year after I went in the military, they started franchising, and it was just kind of that little nugget that I kept in the back of my mind. It was, you know, it was great food, it was cinema, it was craft beer, and these were all things that I were passionate about, and it all came together.
Well, did you pick Dallas, or was Dallas picked for you?
We picked Dallas. We looked at quite a few markets and just kept coming back to DFW for a few reasons. I mean, it's, you know, one of the largest metroplexes in the United States. It was one of the only Texas markets where we didn't have Alamo Drafthouses as a brand. And me and my wife just really loved the area. And we've been up here now almost 4 years and love it even more.
Well, I live in Richardson. I was very happy when I saw the Alamo Drafthouse went in. But why Richardson? Why was Richardson your first location? Then we'll talk about your next location.
We get that question a lot, and it was actually a very easy decision. We looked all over the Metroplex and, in fact, spent almost 2 years looking for that perfect fit. And what we liked about Richardson was One, it was the intersection. 75 and Beltline was very prominent, so we knew we were going to have visibility. And then, you know, as a business, you start looking at demographics and the incomes, the age, and all of that meshed so well for us in Richardson. And then we started looking at the center. And one thing Alamo has always prided its, prided ourselves in is the fact that we love taking something old and making it great again, and that was the Heights Center for us. The landlord looked at us as a loss leader, which is always nice when you can get lower rent, but it's also great to come into a center and see it be revitalized again. And so it was a passion project for us, and the city was so phenomenal to work with. You know, I don't know if there's a easier municipality to work with in the Metroplex, quite frankly.
Well, they're very proactive because they saw a lot of business go out in the 90s
mm-hmm.
and realize they need to pull it back up again. And what's a better draw than a movie theater right there at that Heights section at the southwest corner of Beltline and Central. You are growing, though, in Dallas, and you have a second location coming up, which was going to open, I believe, next year. Talk about where that is and why you picked that area.
Our second location will be what we like to say is in the heart of Dallas, because we feel that it is in the heart of Dallas. It's on South Lamar Street, just south of downtown. Basically, we're two doors down from Gilly's, which everybody's familiar with. We could throw rocks at police headquarters, though we, of course, won't. We picked it based off a lot of facts. The first was that there hasn't been a theater downtown in 15 years. And, you know, you look at why the old West End Theater closed when it did 15 years ago, and then you look at what's happening in downtown Dallas, and I think everybody can see that it's a very different place. The multifamily, the condos going up, what's going on in the arts district. Dallas is finally getting a downtown that is not just work, it's work, live, play. And that's the perfect scenario for us. So the demographics within 3 miles of our location are the exact same as we have in Richardson. So it's good incomes, it's great population density. But the one interesting thing is the multifamily. So not only are we a drive, you know, theater people can drive to, we'll have 400 parking spaces right by our building, but we have currently almost 1,000 units of multifamily within a quarter mile of us. And in the next 3 years, that number looks like it'll jump to 6,000. So it's great to be in an area where people can drive to see you. And it's even better to be in an area where you can be a walk-up venue and destination for people that live in the community.
Yeah, that's a real growing area. A lot of new businesses are going there. And what's really interesting, I saw a picture in a client's office of downtown Dallas in the 1940s, and they had the movie theaters downtown. Matter of fact, they had one that was showing a brand new movie, and the lines were out for the premiere. There are no more downtown.
Mm-mm.
You're going to be. It's interesting. It went from all of them were downtown to none of them. You're moving back in, which is tremendous. Talk about your rolling roadshow. You have rolling roadshow success in Richardson. You have plans for various locations. Talk a little bit about that.
The rolling roadshow is Alamo's outdoor roadshow. It's a 40-foot inflatable movie screen. It's an old box truck that has two 35-millimeter projectors in it. And it's a rolling party for people that love cinema. And so it started out as showing famous movies in famous places. So we showed The Shining at the Stanley Hotel. We showed Jaws on the beach where the movie was filmed, except the screen was on the beach and the patrons were in tubes in the water. In Alamo style, we hired scuba divers to mess with everybody in their inner tubes during Jaws. And so that's how it started. But now it's just something where we can give back to the community and also do private and corporate events with it. So in Richardson, before we opened, we showed six movies, everywhere from the New Perot Museum to the Wildflower Music Festival, and then we showed four in our parking lot. And so it's a free movie. We have local breweries. We had 7 to 8 food trucks, and typically about 4,000 people would show up with their chairs and dogs and kids and bounce houses. So it becomes just a great block party for people to experience. And in fact, this Saturday, we have one in Las Colinas, just south of the convention center. We're showing Raiders of the Lost Ark, and the gates will open at 7 p.m. So it's kind of our say goodbye to summer party.
And it's giving back, too. Now, your website is drafthouse.com/DFW. Can they get information about your rolling road shows on the website?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's drafthouse.com/DFW. Well, from talking to you earlier, you're going to expand even more. You have your second location opening in downtown Dallas. How big are you going to get? What's coming next for Alamo Drafthouse DFW?
Coincidentally, we'll be announcing our third location in the next week or two, which will open about 6 months after our Dallas location. So Dallas will be opening what looks to be summer 2015, and this will be spring 2016. As far as growth, you know, we love the market, and it is a growing market, as everybody knows from the traffic. And, you know, we've always said we can see 4 to 6 Alamos in the market, but you've got to kind of look at where the people are going, where a cinema like Alamo can be successful, and judge that as it comes.
So you are going to be growing, but the whole concept started in the 90s, and I believe it was Tim League that started the original Alamo Draft House. What was his concept? How did he start this concept? It was brand new at that time.
It was. So Tim started the first Alamo in Austin in 1997, and it was a movie lover starting a cinema. I mean, he'd never run a movie theater. He'd never run a restaurant. And what he wanted to do was take the three biggest annoyances of movie patrons, which was talking and texting. Well, texting not at the time, but talking in movies at the time. Expensive concessions and advertisements before movies. And so we said, we're not going to do any of that. And so to this day, if people are continually disrupting the movie, if they're talking or texting on the cell phone, we give them one warning and then we politely ask them to leave without a refund. Instead of a concession stand, we have local craft beer, and all of our menu is made 100% from scratch in-house. And then we never have commercials before our movies. Instead, we have a custom pre-show that is related to the film you're about to see. So it's truly a movie house for movie lovers, whether it's first-run Hollywood movies or alternative content.
And they can get all that information about upcoming movies, where, how they get a hold of your company.
The best place is drafthouse.com/DFW, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Bill, thank you very much for being a part of a Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Bill DiCatano, co-owner and COO of Alamo Drafthouse DFW, drafthouse.com/DFW. My name is Steve Klein. Thank you for joining us at Playmakers Talk Show. You can also get our information at playmakerstalkshow.com. See you again next week.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, playmakerstalkshow.com.